You're listening to Radio Freethinker, episode 94.
Welcome to Radio Freethinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And of course, we're also heard on CFBX in Kamloops. And my name is Ethan, your freethinking historian and also executive director of CFI Vancouver.
And this is Don, your political science philosopher.
And this is not Chloe, this is Daniel, president of the UBC Freethinkers Club.
I'm so glad you said that, because I just know that people would have thought you were definitely Chloe. You have the same inflections in your voice, and honestly, no, I won't say that, because Chloe will be insulted, so I
Oh. Well, Chloe couldn't join us for today's episode, but nevertheless, we have a fantastic show, lots of things to discuss, very interesting skeptical news stories, but, you know, top on the list here on Radio Freethinker, because we are good skeptics, we need to acknowledge some mistakes that we have made from time to time.
Yes, we got a few emails, and a few people have talked to us about one or two oops that we've done, or misspeaks, I think is what I would call them, because we don't lie. Other people lie. We just sometimes get misinformed. Recently, in our episode, I was talking about a constitutional challenge to Canada's polygamy laws, and I inadvertently referred to the LDS, or Church of Latter-day Saints,
Mormons,
as being the ones who were doing that, pushing forward this challenge, where technically it's actually the fundamentalist, members of the fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints, which is a sect of the proper Mormon Church, but is not the Mormon Church itself. And although the Mormon Church has had a history of dealing with polygamy in itself, most of that history is in the past. In the modern church, from what I understand, most normal adherents are not polygamists, and only these fundamentalist evangelical types that have issues.
Yeah, the main central Mormon church has distanced itself from polygamy. I believe it's basically outlawed amongst their members now. Yeah. Like, when I went to the their new temple that went into Langley, there's nothing about polygamy. It's all they emphasize that it's between one man, one woman, mm-hmm. a lot.
They have to be white women? White men? Yeah, okay, that's a whole other thing. Sorry.
No, I don't think so.
So, yeah, so I may criticize the Mormon churches and any church for many issues, but I should not criticize this particular church for its polygamy and save that particular condemnation, if it needs any condemnation, for the fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints. And another thing we did last episode, and one of us started, and we just parroted along with it, we did an episode about land claims, and we made reference to a past BC governor and signatory of several treaties, the Douglas Treaties, with First Nation people. We called this governor Tommy Douglas, who, as we all know, and I should have picked up on,
is the uncle of Kiefer Sutherland.
And the socialist PM of Saskatchewan, and considered the father of Medicare.
Unimportant. He's the uncle of Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, the father-in-law of Donald Sutherland. Yeah, I know, you have to be old to know that. But
Donald
anyhow,
is better than Kiefer.
The actual person we meant to be referring to is James Douglas, who was governor of the colony of Vancouver Island from 1851 to 1864. Sorry, Kiefer and family, if you...
I would like to suggest, actually, thanks to Maxine for pointing that out. As always, we encourage our listeners to check our facts and keep us honest.
Woo-hoo. And the last one, this is one actually I pointed out to myself, having listened to some podcasts. In last episode, we talked about Julian Assange, and we kind of made reference with regards to the allegations of rape, that Sweden was a feminist type country with feminist laws, and we kind of emphasized that, you know, they're kind of hard on men when it comes to any kind of thing. Well, apparently Amnesty International would disagree with that. They have a report out called Case Closed, Rape and Human Rights in the Nordic Country, which actually slams all the Nordic countries, including Sweden. And Sweden apparently is actually pretty good technically as far as its law goes on the books. But when it actually comes to putting this into practice, they're actually really, really poor. They rarely follow through on cases of rape. There's a lot of social stigma involved. And that unless it's actually violent rape, you know, unless you really hurt the woman, pretty much it's considered to be ignored by the legal system. So this doesn't change the politics involved upon this. In fact, it kind of emphasizes the point we were making. This is really weird that they're going after him so hard. But at the same time, you know, we should also emphasize that Sweden is not necessarily that feminist, and that there's still probably a lot of room for women's rights in Sweden and the other Nordic countries.
Probably everywhere, I would say, too.
Yes, except on this show. Well, I know you're on the show today because
Chloe's not here.
We're missing 25% and half of our gender representation.
Exactly.
That's all the corrections I have for the moment. But I might point out, if you listen to our show and you say, hey, you guys got this wrong, or even if you say, I think you got this wrong, let us know. And either A, we'll get back to you and say, no, we were right because, well, we're smart or whatever. Or B, we'll say, geez, thanks for pointing that out. I'm glad you were listening. And we'll make a correction, if not directly on the show, on our blog site or whatever.
Even if we didn't get anything overtly wrong, but you feel like we missed some important aspect of something, let us know about that too.
Exactly. Yeah, what we here on Radio Free Thinker, we really value the input of the listener when it comes to content on this show. But let's shift gears a little bit, go on to some skeptical news. I understand that many Americans are correcting some of their misheld beliefs, at least a little bit.
Well, yeah, this is one of those good news, bad news sort of stories. Gallup poll recently released a poll, oddly enough. Gallup poll released a poll. How weird.
Yes.
Dated, I believe, December 7th, or at least that was the news item on their website, that showed that belief in evolution in the United States is slowly but steadily increasing. It pointed out that belief in creationism is the lowest it's been since 1982, and 1982 is just when this particular series of polls were done, where it was that 44% of Americans apparently believed in creation. That was actually lower than its peak, which was at 47% in 93 and 97, but now is currently at an all-time record low of 40%.
Yay.
The belief in what I'm calling directed evolution, and it's not quite intelligent design, although it probably qualifies, it's the idea that people who accept evolution but think God had something to do with it, and so it may be a little bit, maybe a lot, that's why I call it directed evolution as opposed to intelligent design, is up to 38%. That's from a low of 35% in 93, but it was up to 40% in 97.
So does that mean that 40% of people believe in creationism, then another, on top of that, another 40% believe in directed evolution, so only 20% of people in the U.S. believe in sort of full-on evolution from...
Well, one, you need your math corrected, but then you haven't read my results, and my math that you're basing your numbers on are off. But yes, essentially. So people who believe in the term creationism I'm using here, we were made roughly 10,000 years ago or what have you, and we have not, nor has anything else noticeably changed at all since then. Directed evolution, or intelligent design, if you must, is the idea that we were created maybe millions or billions of years ago. Well, we weren't billions, but we were created a long time ago, and we have evolved into the form we are, except they believe God helped direct our evolution. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give a degree as to how much direction, so it may have been, you know, he had his hand in every step of the way, which is intelligent design, or, you know, he killed the dinosaur here and there just to help us along on our path. Now, as Daniel was trying to round up the numbers here, effectively, I might point out, but according to the poll, Those who accept evolution started off in 1982 at only 9%, sad, but now it's almost doubled to 16%.
16%.
Which rounded up is 20%.
And 16%.
Yeah. What was even more disgusting for me, or not, yeah, disgusting, is that this included, when you looked at people who were, like, university-educated, degree-educated, they were still really low as far as believing in evolution, that they were, I can't remember the numbers, I should have that on top of my head, sorry. But it was a typical thing, you know, the more education you have, the more likely you were to believe in evolution. In fact, I think those people with a high school education were, like, 60%. Likely to believe in creationism, and then about 2% believed in evolution.
You know, I remember reading an article, I think in the most recent Free Inquiry magazine, and they were comparing the rates of belief in evolution to other industrialized Western nations, and the U.S. was way down there by a significant margin. No one else came close to the level of rejection of evolution as the United States did. Remarkably, just scary. I mean, like, this is an incredible failure on some level to impart scientific knowledge.
Yeah, I just looked it up for Canada, and the most recent poll I could find was 59% of Canadians accept evolution.
Yeah.
At least evolution of humans, probably more general evolution, but that's still kind of sadly low.
Yeah.
And 16 is just, where are these people? Like,
well, you know, and the thing is, too, is, I mean, there is at least a certain good discontinuity, because in the scientific community, right, I mean, numbers go up to 70 to 90% believe in evolution irrespective of your field of study.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like if you get to that level of education, it somehow kicks in. But I think you also get a bizarre thing that you have to somehow compartmentalize, because if you tell people, you know, that do you believe in evolution? No. And then do you believe in genetically modified food, which is evolution, right, or breeding or whatever, right? And they have no problem with that. But when you say, well, so you can't make any macro changes. Well, I've been showing all my friends eggplants. Right? You go, wait, why would you show eggplants? Well, I was watching a show of mine, and they were talking about, you know, why did an eggplant get the name eggplant? Because if you've ever seen an eggplant, it's a big, long, purpley thing, right? If it looked like an egg, you'd have a really sick duck or something. But if you go back and you look at the original form of an eggplant, it does. It looks like a little duck egg, right? It's white and all that. But it's been mutated over time into this really bizarre thing, which, you know, most people wouldn't think is likely.
I just want to correct what I just said. Instead of waiting for next episode, I'll just
sure,
right
why
now.
Not?
It's actually 29% believe that God had no part in the development of human beings in Canada. So we're only double as good as the U.S., really.
Right. Well, so, and then there's also a large percentage who believe that God played some role in evolution.
Yeah. There's, what is it? Apparently Quebec is the worst, on a random note.
Really worst.
I thought they'd be best.
I thought they'd be best, yeah. That was my thinking as well.
Because this is maybe we're getting two different things, because just because you believe in God, it doesn't mean you believe in the church. And I think Quebec has had a major schism with the Catholic Church because of its history, right?
Sure.
So you may have a lot less people going to church, but still not enough people who are willing to accept evolution as the fact.
Well, you know, I mean, I remember our first skeptic camp this year. We had one of UBC's biology professors there giving a talk on evolution, and I asked him, you know, what do you think is sort of the general level of acceptance in and around Vancouver? And he thought 60%. That to me seemed really low, but even like a pretty secular city, Vancouver, is only at 60%, and I think we might actually be sort of misplacing it, because I don't know if it's necessarily just going to be religious influence. I think there's going to be a lot of skepticism in general of any science.
I think actually you're getting on the thing, because we call ourselves skeptics, but we're not skeptic in a sort of stoic classic Greek sense of the way where I don't believe anything unless you show it to me in front of my eyes, right? I mean,
right.
We believe in the scientific method. So there's some things that we take based upon historical evidence or some such thing. And it's really hard to really show someone you know, a whale going from land to sea to land to sea, you know, that sort of thing. So if you can't see it, then you go, well, you say it's true, but it's beyond my comprehension, right?
Check out the giant whale fossil at the Beatty Museum of Natural History at UBC.
Biodiversity
Museum. Yeah.
And if you look carefully on it, and if I believe I'm correct, you'll see its legs, too.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll see the little bones. Yeah, that's actually a really fantastic local skeptical highlight for people here at UBC. Why don't we go to a commercial break here on Radio Free Thinker, and we'll be back with some more after this.
Yes.
There was a time when beaver lodges like this one and the busy beavers that build them had almost disappeared from Canada because of overtrapping. But the beaver, who will always be associated with Canada's early days, has been reintroduced into many areas and it's made a successful comeback. The beaver builds dams because he has to store
CITR
in water deep enough not to freeze. With all the wood cutting that the beaver has to do, it's fortunate that his incisor teeth never stop growing.
Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver.
Your Friends of CITR card will get you discounts on Main Street at Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear,
Woo Vintage,
The Kiss Store, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, The Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl,
Flaming Angels Boutique,
and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus, or visit us online at citr.ca.
And we're back. So we were just talking about evolution, how sometimes people have difficulties just conceptualizing the great time and evolution involved. But another area, another science that has a lot of issues with space and time is space, is astronomy. And from what I understand, religion and astronomy are also having some difficulties. Ethan?
Well, that's right, Don. You see, there has been a bit of an issue lately over religious discrimination when it comes to astronomy. Headlines are being made right now by an astronomer named Martin Gaskell, who is claiming that he was denied a job because of his religious beliefs.
You mean is this the classic that this guy doesn't believe in the, you know, the scientific explanation, the Big Bang theory, and therefore they've said no, you can't go in?
Well, not exactly. You see, Gaskell was a leading candidate for a job running an observatory at the University of Kentucky. However, he didn't get the job, and he believes he was discriminated against because he was a Christian. Because of this, Gaskell is suing the university, and the case is going to court in February. So the big question:
did it sort of say anything about what proof he has of this? Like, in the interview, were they like, are you Christian? And he's like, yes. And they're like, okay, that's good. We're done with the interview.
Well, the big question is, you know, what is this discrimination? Did it really happen? And it turns out, well, maybe he actually has a case here. Because at the end of the interview, Michael Cavanero, the chairman of the Physics and Astronomy Department, asked specifically about Gaskell's religious beliefs. Now, in the U.S., federal law prohibits discrimination based on religion, so interviewers typically do not ask about an applicant's faith.
Yeah, when I was doing my last interview, it specifically said don't talk about anything that might be to do with religion. I'm like, well, there goes a lot of my extracurricular activities.
Yeah, well, non-religion. But the big question is here, why did Cavanero ask about this person's religious belief?
From what I understand, and we read the same story, this particular university, isn't it just down the road from the Creationist Museum?
That's true.
One of the things that, and I think this is a genuine concern in the context, but that they were worried about that if they hired this guy in the astronomy department, they would say major university endorses creationism in the Creationist Museum, and it'd be used as some form of publicity tool for the museum at the expense of the academic integrity of the university.
That's definitely part of it. Emails from within the department have shed a bit of light on the issue. A colleague wrote to Cavanero that they did an internet search on Dr. Gaskell and found links to his notes for lectures that explore, among other topics, how the Bible could relate to contemporary astronomy. The colleague is quoted as saying in the email, quote, "Clearly this man is complex and likely fascinating to talk with, but potentially evangelical. If we hire him, we should expect similar content to be posted on or directly linked from the department website." So that's kind of an interesting development there. And of course, there's a bit of concern that with the Creation Museum not even 100 miles away, this could cause a bit of trouble. A university spokesperson said the hiring committee, quote, "had a responsibility to discuss his comments on evolution and science in general. Part of the job is lecturing publicly on science." So it seems like there's two issues here. One, is this person a creationist? And if he is, how do you determine that? And the second point is, if you deny him a job, is that discrimination based on religion? Now, Dr. Gaskell has written that, quote, "there are significant scientific problems in evolution theory." And in lecture notes found online, Dr. Gaskell tried to reconcile the creation account in Genesis with recent astronomical findings. However, he said he accepted standard evolutionary science, and in email response to questions, he said that he was not a creationist and did not deny the theory of evolution. So, what do we make of this?
Well, you know, I'm going to take two lines on this. He's an astronomer. So honestly, although I really disagree with it and I probably wouldn't hire him myself, evolution, at least biological evolution, has very little to do with astronomy. So even if he was a creationist, young Earth creationists might blur the word, but even if he was a creationist or intelligent design, I don't see how that was pertinent to his job. His job was to astronomy, to teach astronomy, and that's good.
But his job is also to educate the public around the university on sort of scientific literacy.
Right, and that's where we get into the second thing. So again, I still think he can square that circle. But when you go into the idea that he's trying to use astronomical things to defend Genesis and Genesis to explain astronomical events, well, then that is at his core competency. And I think and I don't think this is biased. I think, in fact, there's a lot of support for me that if you are a believer in the Genesis account of universal cosmology, then you are almost innately incompetent as an astronomer. And although you may be a theologian, you may have those beliefs, but that would disqualify you for this job. So on the first end, the fact that he's religious, the fact that he believes or doesn't believe in evolution is irrelevant to his core hiring of a job. The fact that he's using biblical doctrine to support astronomical claims, I think, would disqualify him for that job.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if he is a creationist, that is a pseudoscience. And if he does buy into creationism, if he does lecture on it, if he does promote it, then that does call into question his quality as a scientist. Now, again, being a creationist, does that have a huge amount of relevancy as an astronomer? I mean, if he was an English professor, if he was a geologist, if he was a... geology actually probably does play a big role. But, you know, if it was a different field, would this matter as much? And does the university have the authority to pass by on someone because of creationism? If we go by the notion that it's creationism is religion masquerading as science, it's still a masquerade. It's not science.
True, but what if he believed in UFOs? And he thought, you know, that instead of believing God put Earth on the planet, that it was an experiment by aliens or mm-hmm. something like that, right?
Yeah.
Again, an unprovable thing, or that he thought that somehow the stars or our planets were aligned because of some gigantic experiment put on, again, by aliens. You know, I mean, would we have the same... I mean, I still think he would be disqualified because, again, it's dealing with his core competency.
Right.
But if he was a chemist and he believed in creationism or didn't believe in evolution or didn't even believe in the Big Bang, right, I can't see how that would affect his job in chemistry, provided, as a professor of the university, he did not, if he did a lecture series used to promoting science, right? Mm. And if he was promoting science for the university and he did this religious work as part of that, that would also disqualify him. But he seems to be saying, I can separate the two, right? So in that sense, I don't think it has to, except, again, in trying to use Genesis to do cosmology, that hints at his core competency, which I don't think qualifies. And although technically they couldn't do it anyhow, because I think the law is the law, and even if he is an incompetent astronomer, let's pretend, his incompetence, because it's based on religion, means we can't use that against him, or at least they can't use that against him, which is another reason why using religion as a means of discriminator, as opposed to discrimination, isn't valid. I mean, he should be judged on the same criteria if I was, like I say, if I believed in UFOs. Mm-hmm. Could they not hire me for that and say, oh, well, this is my religious belief, therefore you can't touch it, no matter how important it may be to my job or how insane my beliefs would be? It shouldn't be given a special place.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And the only caveat, I think, is, does he take it beyond faith into the realm of science? And of course, if he does that, that I think would likely disqualify him. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I'm curious to see how this wraps up. I mean, what do you think from the university's point of view? Do you think that this is a case that they're going to lose, or do you think that this is going to, they're going to have to buy him off or something?
And actually, you're bringing in the third thing, which is irrelevant to him, the geographical location of this university being close to the Creationist Museum leads into another thing. I mean, again, you know, that can play into it, right? I mean, if you were going to build a mosque near Ground Zero. No, sorry, I won't go there. But no, I think they're going to lose, because, one, it's obvious that they were using religion as a criteria.
Sure.
However appropriate it may or may not have been.
Right.
And the law is rather black and white as far as doing that sort of thing.
I really do hate the fact, though, that a university is afraid to hire somebody because the Creation Museum is down the road. I mean, if this guy was just like a standard mainline Christian and didn't have any wacky beliefs, but they were still afraid that, you know, some press release is going to say, oh, you know, prestigious university hires a Christian to teach blah, blah, blah. That is so lame. But again, very curious to see how this case wraps up. But what else is making news for skeptics?
Well, one thing that I've been reading about, as I act stunned as Ethan stares at me going, well, it's your story. I was reading the other day about how pornography and child porn and trying to protect our children from internet porn has become such an important issue in the United Kingdom that they are going to ban all internet porn. I mean, first of all, they've tripled the rates for kids to go to university, so they denied them an education. Now they're going to deny them the only other good thing in life, porn. But it's, apparently, you know,
it's not quite that simple.
No.
There's an opt-in switch.
Yes. I wonder if you need parental... Anyhow, yeah, so the United States coalition government says it's discussing plans to see that all pornographic websites are automatically blocked to keep children from accessing them. And they used a curious phrase. They said pre-exposure to sexual material, which just... I mean, it was an interesting way to say that. I don't want my kid to see filth. But, you know, it's like you're going to see porn sooner or later. We just want to delay it as long as we can for whatever reasons. And I'm not gonna get on my high horse about that sort of thing. As Daniel mentions, that they do plan to have a opt-in. So if your ISP is going to block everything, and if you send them a letter or do whatever hoops you have to go through, they will allow the content to go to your home.
This is just going to make it so only nerdy children can get porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to have services to sell to all the other children.
Actually, no. Nerdy children and children of white trash. Parents who just don't care, and daddy needs his porn, and I don't care if the kids see it or not. And but it was interesting, too, because today I was seeing an update to the story, and one of the major technology guys at one of the ISPs in England just says, this is an impossible thing to do. There is just literally too much porn on the internet. Logistically, you could not filter it all out. It's just incompetent.
That's why I don't talk to the tech guy. They're depressing.
Yes. Well, you know, it struck me as funny. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, it's a nice thing. It's like prohibition with alcohol. You know, you want to try and put as much limitations on it, but there's a certain point where you're starting getting a diminishing returns, right?
Mm-hmm. But maybe this is a sort of a roundabout way of helping the print industry. You know, you take out the internet. So the emphasis is on going, you know, go back to buy, you know, the Playboys and the Stag Knights and the, you know.
That, well, you know that could be. Of course, one of the other things, and okay, I'm putting on my conspiracy hat here, so everyone turn down. If you were filtering out all porn and you accidentally filtered out things, I don't know, like WikiLeaks or something. Oops, sorry, we didn't mean to. Yeah, you know, it's just all the technology is so complex. Oh, we'll work on that. But anyhow.
Right.
I'm sure that wasn't why. Actually, I'm sure they're doing it because they're desperate to point people in other directions besides kicking the current government's butt out of office. But WikiLeaks is a very interesting topic. I wonder if we'll be talking about it more in the future.
What do you think, Daniel?
Like a minute in the future?
Very likely. Let's go to a commercial break here on Radio Free Thinker, and we'll be back with some more after this.
Well, how best to explain it? You've seen me in X-Men.
Yeah.
The character I am, Professor Charles Xavier. Mm. If you remember, he can control things with the power of his mind. Yeah. And make people do things and see things. So I thought, what if you can do that for real? I mean, not in a comic book world, but in the real world.
All right.
So in my film, I play a man who controls the world with his mind.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, for instance, I'm walking along, and I see this beautiful girl, and I think I'd like to see her naked, and so all her clothes fall off.
All her clothes fall off?
Mm, yes, and she's scrabbling around to get them back on again, but even before she can get her knickers on, I've seen everything. You know, I've seen it all.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. We've already seen everything.
Okay. It's a comedy, is it?
No.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a cry. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
Uh-huh. You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Bread and Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
We're back on Radio Free Thinker here on CITR. So we're going to be finishing up, I guess, our, you know, like trilogy of WikiLeaks content.
Oh, wait. Before we go there, have I got the irony of ironies. So apparently there's this thing called World Press Freedom Day, and it's celebrated May 3rd. The 2011 one is going to be held in which country? Come on, can anyone guess what country is going to be holding the World Press Freedom Day, which its main principle is to support the fundamental principle of free press, and ironically enough, to also pay tribute, solemn tribute, to journalists who died. But free press. So what country next year, 2011? Come on, guess. What
China?
Country? Oh, you know, that would have been good. That would have been no better. Oh, you know, and that would also
North Korea?
This is the most, we're talking irony here. Those are rather, well, I guess those are ironic.
It's ironic, just too obvious.
Well, okay, so the obvious choice that I'm winning here, the U.S. is holding the World Press Freedom Day. And obviously, whoever created the press release for the American government hasn't actually been reading any of the news for the last year in the United States.
Or they just have a sick sense of humor.
because according to the United States official government press release, they are going to be commemorating the 21st century of media, new frontiers and new barriers. It mentions how new media has empowered citizens. And I got some great quotes in this thing here. One of them is the United States government, and we as World Press Freedom Day, we are concerned about the determination of some governments to censor and silence individuals and to restrict the free flow of information. Now, of course, if anyone knows the United States' comments about WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, and that whole genre of things, you can just see the irony dripping from every word on there. Because which country has threatened to assassinate, arrest, shut down, destroy, deport,
make up annihilate. New laws to find a reason for him to be.
Well, and let's not forget torture. Not so much of Julian Assange, but there's the poor guy who actually Bradley Manning, who has been disappeared from the world, and who knows what they're doing to him in order to get evidence against Julian Assange. The very last thing, and this is the pledge of the United States with regards to World Press Freedom Day, is they say, and I quote, "We mark such events as World Press Freedom Day in the context of our enduring commitment to support and expand press freedom and the free flow of information in this digital age."
Ha! Thomas Jefferson is rolling in his grave.
Yes. So on that ironic note, Daniel?
Yes, we are going to tackle some of the interesting story around government censorship of WikiLeaks, and then get into a bit of a discussion, debate amongst ourselves about whether WikiLeaks is a good thing for democracy. We're not going to be talking about any of the specific stories coming out of WikiLeaks, although I highly recommend you go check them out. There's lots of interesting stuff, but it's not really in the vein of this show to just sort of spout off the news, but go check it out. Interesting.
rawstory.com has a lot of them.
Yes, or The Guardian, or New York Times. There's lots of good places. But anyways, on to the turn of events of how corporations and the government have gone out of their way to make life difficult for WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Before the release of the Cablegate, as it was called, WikiLeaks' server was hosted by Amazon. Very, very quickly after the diplomatic cables were leaked, Amazon dropped them out of nowhere. They didn't even tell WikiLeaks they were going to do it.
What excuse did they give for doing that?
They basically argued that it was against their terms of service because they gave basically two reasons. That what they were doing was illegal, which doesn't make any sense because it's not illegal to spread leaked documents. It's only illegal to leak the documents. They also argued that they're hosting copyrighted material, but the U.S. Copyright Act clearly says that any works by the U.S. government have no copyright. So neither of their arguments made any sense.
Yeah, do they have the Pentagon Papers on Amazon?
They do. They host the Pentagon Papers. They, for a while, stood up for a book on how to practice pedophilia, which they did eventually cave in and take it down, but they stood up for that longer than they stood up for WikiLeaks.
To be fair, too, I think I just read today that that guy is actually being arrested.
Yeah,
charged, not arrested.
That guy is actually getting charged. But yeah, the really interesting thing about the story with Amazon is Senator Joe Lieberman's office, he actually announced that Amazon was dropping hosting WikiLeaks before Amazon themselves, which really makes you wonder who here was actually deciding that Amazon should drop the service.
You know, it might just be me, you know, and I hate to fall into one of these, you know, Jesse Ventura sort of thing, but I'm beginning to see sort of a conspiracy around this. And I know our show hates to get into conspiracy, because usually we debunk conspiracies, but occasionally it's good to look into them. Mm-hmm. So are there other things that might lead one to think that there's actually an organized sort of plot or cabal out to bring WikiLeaks down, if not directly through these means by denying them access to servers and that?
Yeah. Well, many members of Congress in the U.S. Have made it very, very clear that they hate WikiLeaks and they'll do anything they can to go after them. And sort of that combined with all of the different companies that are very quickly doing what they can to make life difficult for WikiLeaks. After Amazon, PayPal decided to stop processing donations to them. Then every DNS dropped their domain name. So when you type in WikiLeaks.com, it stopped going to their website. Luckily, Google still allowed you to search for WikiLeaks and find it, and EasyDNS stepped in and brought their domain back. So they're back on the internet. Then MasterCard stopped processing transactions for them. Then Visa followed along. Now, Apple has deleted a app that allows you to read the WikiLeaks on your iPhone or iPad really easy.
Although, proudly enough, I got it. And for those people who still want it, if you go to a thing called App Tracker, you have to jailbreak your thing, you can still get it if you wanted to support them that way.
It wasn't, I should say, it's not a very good app. There's plenty of reasons why you shouldn't get that app, but that's not the reason Apple took it off. They said it was because it was hosting, like, illegal information, which is, once again, not true under the U.S.'s own clear laws.
Right.
So why is this, why does none of this make any sense for companies to be doing this out of their own sort of volition? Why does it seem to be that someone has to be pressuring them? Well, MasterCard and Visa allow you to donate money to the Ku Klux Klan, or basically through wings of the Ku Klux Klan, like the Knights Party or Christian Concepts. The very interesting thing about Christian Concepts is it requires you to affirm that you are white, not married to a non-white, and not gay or anything like that in order to donate. It's not, it's totally, like, out there racist. And Visa and MasterCard have no problem with that, but WikiLeaks is somehow worse. So it's hard not to look at this.
I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in. Because, okay, as despicable as it is to try and support the KKK, which is a racist group, but it is a private group, and they're allowed to do this. But, I mean, obviously Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, they wouldn't actually be supporting anything that is, I don't know, internationally illegal or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot about that. PayPal, Visa, and MasterCard allow you to donate to Israeli settlements, which are illegal under international law. They are clearly illegal. There's no, like, ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's clearly illegal. WikiLeaks is clearly not illegal at the moment. They might change the law, but at the moment, it's clearly not illegal. So it's really hard to look at this and see any consistency unless they're being pressured by the government.
Well, and is there a consistency? Because although WikiLeaks has done the big dump, right, has the same kind of pressure been put against the New York Times or the Guardian or Der Spiegel or these other institutions which have published a large number of these documents that WikiLeaks has been releasing? Have they suffered the same sort of...
They haven't really had any pressure put on them. Nobody is... dropped the NewYorkTimes.com domain or anything.
Right.
That's not to say there are some prominent members of the U.S. Congress that want to go after the New York Times as much as WikiLeaks. Like,
but they have a lot of reasons
Joe Lieberman.
To go after the New York Times.
But yeah, the New York Times sort of has a veil of... It's a lofty publication. It has a history. I think there's also
a difference, though. Like, if they were to directly go after the New York Times, that's different from putting pressure behind the scenes to get another organization to stop supporting another organization.
That's true, yes.
There's also a big push to try and separate what WikiLeaks is doing from journalism, that somehow they're trying to put a wedge between them. I admit, WikiLeaks is stretching the boundaries of what we consider to be proper journalism, but it still seems to be doing the same sort of function. In fact, I have a quote from Julian Assange that uses, I love this term, he says, it's a new type of business McCarthyism in the United States to deprive an organization of its funds that it needs to survive and to deprive me personally of funds for my lawyers to help in my prosecution. Now, for those people who aren't quite acquainted with McCarthyism, McCarthy was a big thing in the 50s based after Senator McCarthy, where essentially you take the idea of mass pressure, harassment, and blacklisting, this is important in this one, to put pressure on other people to A, shut them up, and B, get them out. One of the biggest things is once you were put on a blacklist in the 50s, you couldn't get a job, you couldn't go to certain places, you were just ostracized from quote-unquote proper society. And I'm seeing a lot of this sort of echoing here. Hmm. And I don't even think I'd have a huge problem if they charged him with something, right? Mm-hmm. Well, besides rape. I mean, if they charged WikiLeaks with something, right? And there seems to be this, I mean, everything that's going on is extrajudicial. I mean, this is the whole Big Brother, you got to be afraid of government because they'll get you even if they can't get you legally. I mean, this seems to be playing into all these hands. I'm surprised something like Alex Jones and all the real wingnuts haven't jumped on this as being the worst thing since, well, Obamacare.
I mean, it makes you kind of wonder, too, because you think they'd be able to cook up some excuse for this, you know, like that he's endangering American soldiers or something. You know, you think they'd have some justification.
Well, actually, I should say that some of the different companies that have blocked WikiLeaks or done anything possible to stop them have used the justification that because he's endangering people, that's against the law. None of them have really justified how what they're doing is endangering people any more than what the New York Times is doing or The Guardian, which no one seems to care about as much, but that has been one justification by the companies.
Okay.
Although we had a similar thing like this, if we remember a few years back, Valerie Plain, and she got some information from government sources about an undercover CIA operative, right? And then she spurred out the name because she happened to be the wife of a political enemy of the Bush government at the time. And it was a bit of a big thing, but at the same time, it was not like this vilification. It's like, well, you should give us your source, or you should, you know. It's just an entirely different, mm-hmm. I don't know, kerfuffle over it. Or what was it? We were looking at a video about Bob Woodworth, who people have said, oh, you've endangered American politics, you've endangered people's lives. But, I mean, you can still go to Amazon.com and buy his books, even though he's got, you know, a lot of this information that he was given.
There was also, it was either an aide to Dick Cheney, I believe, who leaked the name of a CIA spy. Mm-hmm. And the tally now is something up to like 200 informants of this CIA agent are now dead. No one ever went after Dick Cheney for that.
Yeah.
No, although they did. That's Scooter Libby. They did politics to get around that.
Yeah.
That's related to this Valerie Plame thing. Although there is another interesting thing to skirt the last thing before we go on to is it good or bad. Recently, someone mysteriously has leaked some of the police documents that Sweden had on the Julian Assange case. And Julian Assange said, oh, this is all a smear campaign. And in this particular case, you know, I sit there and I say, yes, I think it was done specifically to make you look bad, to try and hurt you, but shut up and suck it up. You know, if you are in the business of releasing secrets of other people and someone releases your secrets, although I may think it's a different context, you
have to take that medicine and just shut up.
I mean, there are legitimate differences between it. Like, you can, private citizens have more of a expectation of privacy than government does, because government's supposed to be working for us.
Mm-hmm. And he's doing it in order to open up government as opposed to, I mean, everyone says that he's out to get the United States. Well, the biggest reason why these have all been largely American documents is because that was where the source come. If this had been a British private or a Russian private, all these would have been Russian documents and not American documents.
Apparently, the next big leak of WikiLeaks is going to be a major U.S. bank, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, though. Like, I mean, if this had been a leak about China, would we see the same zeal against, you know, WikiLeaks? I mean, I think
China.
Well, by China, but would you see it by these companies, like, dropping?
I'd imagine that none of the companies would drop them. I'd imagine U.S. politicians would be pro-WikiLeaks if that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Anything to weaken China, I think, is in the U.S. interest to some extent.
So here's a question for you. Am I being naive or racist or whatever? Or would Assange just have disappeared one day? Just, where'd he go? Oh, this is gone.
By China?
And then there'd be like a little, you know, Doug Dearth behind his house where he used to live, you know, and if you 20 years later, we found the bones of him. Because, I mean, we have this thing that
maybe
although
he pissed off Russia.
Yeah. And Russia has been known to eliminate journalists who are not favorable to their position or pain in their side.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting. What else is good up with Wiki?
So, sort of behind all the drama around what's going on with WikiLeaks by all these different companies and the actual stories going on is the basic question of, is WikiLeaks a good thing for democracy or a bad thing? There's many people who argue for both sides of this, or many people who may be more indifferent to it. And so we're going to look at this question a little bit and see if we can come up with some good reason why either side is better after this break.
Stewie, hey.
Hey there. So it's been 24 hours. Got my money?
Oh, you know what? Just give me till next Friday. I'll have it for you.
Oh, that's funny. I could have sworn I said have it today.
Yeah, I don't have it, sorry.
Oh, well, all right then. That's good, OJ.
Ah! Ah!
Yeah, that hurt?
Ah!
That hurt?
What the hell?
Yeah, it feels so good, does it?
Ah!
No,
ah!
Huh?
Oh!
Yeah.
CITR would like to thank everyone who donated their time, love, and money to Fund Drive 2010. The money raised goes directly into the operating costs of keeping our station on the air. To thank you for your donation, we have prizes that are waiting for you here. If you have not yet picked up your prizes, now is the time. Come down to CITR World Headquarters in room 233 of the Student Union Building on UBC campus between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday.
You got till 5 o'clock, you hear me? You got till 5 o'clock!
You freaking psychopath!
Clean yourself up.
Pay your pledge. Get your prizes. It's that simple.
We're back on Radio Free Thinker, and we're going to decide once and for all, in this conversation for all time, is WikiLeaks a good or bad thing? Daniel, go.
Whoa. Well, I'll start with the argument for why WikiLeaks is a good thing.
Okay.
Then we can do the counter-argument. For democracy, you basically need an informed citizenship. You can't have...
What a novel concept!
I know, it's crazy. But obviously, if people are voting on what the government's supposed to do, they need a decent idea of what the government is actually doing. So basically, the argument for WikiLeaks moves along that way. It's that people need to know. And it's also a great way for people to check the abuses of people who have been elected. If there's much more transparent information as to what they have done, people can voice their opinions on it.
And that leads into the other aspect of this, that even if we, you know, want an informed electorate, we may or may not acknowledge that governments may need to keep things secret. Mm-hmm. But what degree of secrecy? And if they start making everything secret, you know, the toilet paper order is secret, and, you know, what they did, that, again, it makes it impossible for us to keep a track on what's going on. I mean, even if we acknowledge, A, if everything is kept secret, that was one of the complaints about the Bush era, was this use of the secrecy stamp was becoming wider and wider, and everything was becoming secret, which meant that there could be no accountability for anything they had done.
Yeah, it's important to mention that these leaks, there's over 250,000 diplomatic cables. 95% of them are pretty mundane things.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think I looked at the count last I saw that 15,000 out of the 200,000 were stamped secret.
Yes. And then altogether, I think about 50,000 of them were stamped with something basically saying they shouldn't be revealed. The rest, obviously, people aren't allowed to just, like, send them off to the newspaper whenever they want to or say them, but they're not marked, like, secret by the U.S. government or anything.
Right. So, but, you know, this secrecy thing and all that, right? I mean, are there any concrete examples that anyone has used where if WikiLeaks had existed prior to its recent incarnation, where it might have actually done some good?
Yeah, there's some people who have sort of argued counterfactuals in history, which is where if something changed, how would the outcome change? Obviously, these aren't perfect arguments for skeptics. It does require a certain amount of guessing, whether informed or not. So I'm not saying that you should take these as if WikiLeaks existed, this is definitely things would definitely be better.
Okay, what is it? Come on, tell me.
I just want to make sure that's ahead of time. Before 9/11, there was a report, an intelligence report that was directly handed to George Bush that basically said that Al-Qaeda was planning to attack the U.S. using passenger aircraft. It was ignored by Bush and pretty much ignored by the intelligence community.
And more telling, apparently in his own handwriting, it's written, "Good, on schedule, I see."
That did not happen.
Oh. Well, okay. So that's a good counterfactual. Well, what about something else? I mean, has anything come out?
I didn't
about...
even get to the counterfactual part.
Oh, I thought you had.
Basically, if WikiLeaks existed and leaked that document, and the person who was training these two people who didn't want to learn how to land, they just wanted to know how to fly, they might be more suspicious. They might have seen something wrong there, reported it. Or even just if the information gets out that something could happen this way, then there's a much better chance that people are going to do something about it.
Well, there's public pressure to react.
There's public pressure, yeah.
Well, okay, so that have you done your counterfactual now?
Yes.
So, okay, let's go with the other argument then, saying, well, you know, you can't trust government, and that the government, you know, always tells us the truth, and it's done everything for our best. Are there any examples in these documents where the government hasn't been truthful, and that it may have done not been truthful to promote perhaps political agenda?
Yes. For both the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, more so for the Iraq war, the U.S. government made many misleading, if not outright lying, statements about conditions in Afghanistan or Iraq in order to justify the war effort. Weapons of mass destruction, you might remember that. Despite the fact that internal intelligence documents expressed grave doubts as to whether weapons of mass destruction actually existed. If WikiLeaks was around then and leaked that out, it might have stopped the war in Iraq and led to hundreds of thousands of less deaths in the world.
Okay, I've had enough of your leftist pinko talk here.
I'm a libertarian.
You can call a pig whatever you want. It's still pink. Okay, but I mean, we have to acknowledge here, right? I mean, that for diplomacy to go on, there's a lot of it that kind of goes on the side. You know, politicians, or at least diplomats, need to be informed, not only the facts, but sort of the nuance, the gossip, the infighting that's going behind, which, if was released to the public, would, one, destroy the credibility of the diplomats, and two, may actually create more trouble than you really, really want. I mean, isn't this an acknowledgement where WikiLeaks may have done some harm in opening this up and throwing sand into the gears of diplomacy?
Yes, WikiLeaks might have done some harm in the fact that certain countries are going to know some of the stuff that other countries have been saying about them behind their back, sort of like schoolyard gossip kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of important to say, like, are you going to shoot the messenger, or are you going to be pissed at the people saying this in the first place?
Well, I'm so glad you used that simile or analogy, because that's another thing I keep hearing about, is that, you know, especially on certain media sources in the United States, how many millions of people have died because of the release. I mean, that's a bit of exaggeration. But, I mean, there is a possibility that some of this information, once leaked, could lead to physical damage or endangerment. We talked about the CIA Scooter Libby releasing, you said there's a death toll on that. Well, obviously, there must be a death toll accounted now to Julian Assange and his releases, WikiLeaks releases.
So far, there hasn't been any deaths that you could, in any reasonable way, directly account to the WikiLeaks releases. That's not to say it couldn't happen. Obviously, there's some stuff in here that might really piss off two countries, and they might want to do some stuff, but I doubt the death toll will even approach the death toll of something like the Iraq War, which was justified on lies.
You know, it's funny, too, on this note, and I'm going to shift to be the good cop, is that one of the things that they complained about, you know, is that they haven't been redacting names and all that, and that actually, WikiLeaks has made a big change, because originally it would just dump the stuff on the internet for anyone to take. And for the last couple of dumps it's done, is it's actually given the information to these newspaper agencies with the sole purpose that there wasn't enough resources in WikiLeaks themselves to go through them all and try and redact these names to protect people who are genuinely innocent or may genuinely be at risk. And actually, they've been criticized for this practice.
Yeah, they actually went out to governments that were involved in these and said that if they believed any of them would cause immense harm, they would redact them. None of the governments wanted to admit that there was any truth to that, so they just ignored it. But it's an interesting way. Now, I'm going to quickly get into some arguments against it, because we're running out of time. So what are the basic argument against it is that governments have a right to secrets. You obviously, there's certain things that they have to decide without it being public knowledge. For instance, if they had information as to where Osama bin Laden was hiding, if they posted that out, Osama bin Laden's going to be like, crap, they know where I am,
yeah,
and he's going to run away. So obviously, I think pretty much every reasonable person can agree that there are some legitimate reasons they could have secrets.
Right.
Now, for these specific diplomatic cables, they're generally justified on sort of a utilitarian basis, that given what's already happened, releasing these documents is just going to do more harm than good, because it's going to sour relationships between all these different countries. It's also going to sour the reputation of the U.S. government, decrease legitimacy of people's view of the government as legitimate, and this will all cause more harm than good. Now, historically, leaks in government have been a fairly common thing. Now, obviously, 250,000 like cable dumps are new. They kind of require the internet.
Right.
But historically, they've happened before. I think possibly one of the best ones to compare to this leak is, I don't know how many people know this, but before 1771, debates in the UK Parliament were kept entirely secret. Only parliamentary members and their staff could ever hear or look at what happened in them. Then they were finally leaked, and like nowadays, there was all these cries that this would be the end of government as we know it. There couldn't be possibly any legitimacy what they said was made open to everyone. It would cause irreparable damage to everything. And afterwards, there was pretty much nothing like that. The parliament actually gained a lot of legitimacy when it was opened up. People could actually tell what was going on. Democracy was improved. This little thing called the Industrial Revolution started happening. Obviously, I'm not saying that was just because of this, but this around this time is sort of a very big turning point for the UK, and a lot of it has to do with opening themselves up to more transparent democracy.
I think maybe as a final word on this topic is, I mean, one of the things we're dealing with, dealing with a pendulum here, right? I mean, in very, very closed societies, you need to break open and let things out. On very open societies, maybe sometimes you can be too open, because, I mean, as we say, there are some genuine, justifiable secrets that need to be kept. I think the United States, especially in the last decade or so, has definitely moved to the point where it needs a bit more fresh air in its documents. You know, not that everything should be open, but a lot more than what has been opened.
Yeah, it's clear the will of the U.S. people is on that side. Like, that's a lot of what Barack Obama ran on, transparency and openness in government.
And I think another thing, too, just to round that out, is that if you take a look at these issues and you keep it with a skeptical eye and you're willing to judge and weigh the evidence that you see out there, that you can wade through it all and find a certain degree of truth. That although there's a lot of rhetoric on both sides, if you're willing to, you know, test and use and evaluate, use your critical thinking skills, that you can take, you know, something out of this WikiLeaks event that is more than just, oh, it's politics, therefore there is no right or wrong answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the worst possible thing you can do is assume that this is indicative of, you know, a relativistic view of international relations. I think that you have to keep in mind that you're dealing with a lot of, you know, perhaps even hard to notice, but you are dealing with people who to work this like a science. And there is a certain method to the madness. So you have to be aware of that process. And I think WikiLeaks is done a reasonably good job of making that argument front and center. And, you know, I think that's definitely the takeaway message.
Speaking of takeaway messages, do we have any highlights for the coming week?
You know what we do, actually? Today, downtown, Skeptics in the Pub, 7:30 at the Railway Club here in Vancouver. Speaking of getting secret information, our old personal leaker of skeptical information, Fred Bremer, will be spilling the beans on Tam Oz, so I suggest you come and check it out. There will also likely be some interesting Skype conversations, as I hope that we will be visited by our former co-host, Rob Teska, as well as potential other skeptical luminaries. So I encourage you to come out. And that's not the end of the skeptical drinking, because on December 30th, we have the last Skeptics in the Pub of 2010. That's in Richmond at Legends Pub, 7:30.
Cool. My skeptic highlight this week is just, it's one I reiterated before, is that this is a season of giving. And right now, there are a lot of families that are feeling bad. They don't have quite enough food on their table. People who just can't even afford a proper meal. Don't force them to go to religious institutions like, you know, the church soup kitchen or the Salvation Army. Go out, give some money to the BC Food Bank. UBC has a food bank. Help support them in a secular way. Share the happiness and joy of the season with others who are less fortunate, and allow them to do it in a secular and rational way.
Yeah, very well said.
I got nothing after that.
Wow, what a way to go.
He's just too inspirational.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Next time we meet, it'll be, next week. So I hope that all our listeners, whether you just decide to celebrate the winter solstice or the birthday of Sir Isaac Newton, or whether you
or Boxing Day and all the great deals.
Yeah, Boxing Day. Ooh. Or any other religious, secular, or cultural celebration, I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have a safe, warm, and happy week. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. This is Ethan, your free-thinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
And this is Daniel signing off.
Morning. Good day to you, sir. Hey, wait a minute. What the hell?